Welcome to the Stabbin' Stylists Podcast. I'm Randa.
And I'm Ashley.
We are just two stylists who love true crime and hair, and we're going to tell you about both.
This is a true crime podcast. These stories may be disturbing to some. Listener discretion is advised.
Happy Halloween. Happy Samhain.
What?
That's the... You don't know about that?
No.
Okay. So that's like the old... It's basically like the pagan holiday.
Really?
Yeah. It's like kind of equinox, I think. I'll have to Google it later.
Well, we didn't even plan this.
No, we didn't. Hang on just a second.
Hey, guys. We're back. And we Googled it.
Do you know it's really pronounced Samhain? But Samhain... You'd have to listen to other podcasts, okay? And that's why we drink reference.
Well, and not just that. This is an Appalachian podcast, so if you...
It's Samhain.
Yeah, like...
And yes, it is a Celtic pagan tradition. I don't think it is on an equinox.
So let's do a hair fact. And this will be coming out on Halloween. So we decided that our hair fact is going to be, for the love of God, if you have a blonde-headed baby... Or a light brown-headed baby.
Yeah, like if your kid is tow-headed, especially.
And your kid wants to be Ariel, the mermaid, and you put that bright red spray on her hair, tomorrow her hair will be pink.
Yeah, just get that bevy a wig.
Yes.
Or some clip-in.
Do not spray that stuff on your child's head.
Because it will stain.
It will.
I mean, it's going to come out, but it might take a minute. That's all I'm saying.
And... Stuff says temporary. It's going to wash out. It does not always wash out. Don't spray stuff on your kid's hair. Buy a cheap wig off of Amazon. You will thank us for this. Let's talk about some spooky stuff. Now, a lot of people, if you're not from Cleveland, you might not know this. Cleveland, Tennessee loves Halloween.
We sure do. We have a massive block party every year on Halloween. I'm talking like the whole town, the whole county comes out for this.
So there are a couple spooky stories in Cleveland that everybody knows about. But let's actually start with one that not everybody knows about. Me and my little sister, Allison, this has probably been 10 years ago. We went on a haunted walk through Cleveland, mm-hmm. and that's where I learned about this story. And it was really cool. Right around the corner from us, the Bank of Cleveland building.
Yeah.
When they told the story, we were in the basement of the Bank of Cleveland building. It was so, so, so cool. So shout out to the haunted tour downtown. But this is the Phantom Monk of Charleston, Tennessee. The story of the Phantom Monk begins with a massive flood in 1867 that caused hardcore damage. And Charleston is, you know, a really small town. It's right there on the river, and it just got absolutely flooded. And when it did this, it collapsed the railroad tracks. There was a train wreck, and many died instantly. A lot of people were hurt. There was just mass casualty at the time. And there was a doctor named Dr. Bazemore, who was from the Charleston area, and he was actually seen there. He was tending to his... They'd even said he had, like, collapsed of exhaustion. He was so tired. At the end, they say that all the bodies were accounted for, except for one. This body was the body of a monk that had been traveling alone.
Are we talking, like...
Like a robe, rosary... kind of monk. Yes. What you are picturing in your head as a monk is who this monk was.
Like Friar Tuck.
Yes.
All right.
Dr. Bazemore was said to have been seen treating this monk after, and actually, to what you just said, the monk wore a dark brown habit, a white rope used as a belt, and there was a rosary that hung on it. And the monk was traveling from Baltimore to New Orleans, and the train passed through Charleston.
Well, I needed some God in New Orleans.
They did, especially in 1857, I'm sure. So Dr. Bazemore actually later left Charleston, and he moved to Cleveland. Dr. Jacob Lake McCleary moved in, and on his first day, someone came up to him, and this man's last name was Hornsby. Which seemed like such an 1867.
Yeah, it's Mr. Hornsby.
But really, we were in Charleston, Tennessee. So it was like, here's Mr. Hornsby.
Hi, Mr. Hornsby's here.
But on this day, he came up to the new doctor and was like, hey, Dr. Bazemore left you the skeleton. And I've always like really thought the skeleton was really cool. And say that, you know, hey, this skeleton appeared after the flood and nobody ever knew where the skeleton came from, but back then it wasn't like the plastic skeletons that you see in doctor's offices now. Like they were like actually like skeletons, right?
Yeah.
And so he was like, yeah, like this is really fascinating. And that's when the mysterious clicking sounds had started to happen.
Wait.
Yeah.
There's clicking.
Like the sounds of beads. Like
like a rosary jingle.
But and occasionally the doctor would catch like a glimpse of like a figure in like a brown garb outfit. And the spirit seemed nice, didn't really mess with him. They lived in peace in there. So he wasn't like a knock stuff off the wall kind of ghost. I mean, he was a monk ghost, so he was a real chill ghost.
We're not hitting the poltergeist here.
No, it was all cool. But then the house was demolished in 1932. A rosary and a brown habit were found inside the walls of the house. So was that skeleton the monk skeleton?
Looking at you, doctor. You weirdo.
But a lot of people had never heard this story.
So I live very close to a certain cemetery in town. And I go up there and I walk around quite a bit. And it's very intriguing to me, the story of our little Nina Craig Miles. So there's a very famous mausoleum in Cleveland that also everybody goes to on Halloween and goes to look to see if the blood is on the marble. The person that is inside of this mausoleum or that it was erected for is little Nina Craig Miles. So Nina was born to Mira and John Craig Miles on August 5th, 1864. On October 18th, 1871, when Nina was 7 years old, she went on a buggy ride with her grandfather. It was St. Luke's Day, and so they were out having a good time, enjoying the day, and some folklore will tell you that the grandfather had the reins that day. Well, some people say that Nina was, like, driving the buggy, you know, like, sitting up there, grandpa's lap, driving the buggy, whatever. At any rate, they were going way too fast. Inexplicably, the buggy crossed railroad tracks in town, and just as the train approached, obviously couldn't get stopped. Dr. Thompson was thrown clear, but Nina was not so lucky. Her father, John Craig Miles, was overcome with grief, and he had plenty of money. This is one of the richest families in town at this point, right?
Yes, actually, the history branch of the library is their house. Like their house.
This house is gorgeous, y'all. This is like a huge Victorian style home.
And their house was actually in walking distance to the Episcopal Church at the time. And it was actually St. Albans Church. And I know a lot of people from Cleveland are probably thinking about the Episcopal Church that's there now.
Yeah.
But this was before that.
So here's the thing about little Nina. Is at the time, she was buried at a very old cemetery in town, one of the first cemeteries in town. And Currently, today, there's a large Craig Miles plot there with members of the Craig Miles family buried in it. That was not going to be Nina's resting place because her dad had enough money that he imported Italian marble to build this gorgeous mausoleum for Nina. He imported this marble in from like Italy, and it was like some of the finest marble in the world. It's pure white, all that kind of thing. But in time for it to get here, Nina had to be put to rest somewhere. And so she was buried up here in the cemetery. Later, after it's all constructed, Nina's body is exhumed and then taken to the mausoleum. He did not just pay for this mausoleum to be built. The St. Luke's, the beautiful St. Luke's church that you see downtown now, he actually paid for that building too. But the crazy thing is that church at the time cost $40,000 to build. But the mausoleum right behind it, that tiny, beautiful little marble one, was $50,000. So that was actually $10,000 more than the entire church was.
After all of this, she's exhumed, she's placed in the tomb. Her parents plan to be placed in the mausoleum with her when they pass. They've got it all dedicated. They've got inscriptions for Nina. Y'all, when I tell you that this mausoleum is still gorgeous, it's beautiful. They open the gate every Easter. This was actually a tradition that was started by the other kids that knew Nina. Obviously, we're friends of the Craig Miles before all of this, and we're friends of Nina's. And the kids wanted her to have an Easter too. And so they would come and they would leave flowers and like little Easter candy and gifts for Nina. But so shortly after Nina was placed inside the mausoleum, a red spot appeared. So there's like two pillars in the front, and then there's like a header of marble. And it's on that header of marble where the red spot appears.
It's like right above where you walk into it.
But also, so the Craig Miles family was really remembered in like this amazing light. This was not the only tragedy that they went through. They ended up having a baby die in infancy, like before it was even named. That baby's in there too, right?
And then actually in 1899, John Craig Miles was walking across the street in downtown Cleveland, and he slipped on a patch of ice and fell, and later died of blood poisoning because of that. So then that left only Adelia. She actually was killed too. In 1928, at the age of 80 years old, she was hit by a car. She is also in the mausoleum.
Yeah. Literally everyone in there.
Yeah.
Died a unfortunate death.
Crazy death.
Yes.
Every single one of them. And they have actually tried to remove and replace that marble a couple times. And it's same thing still happened.
Yeah. It keeps coming back. The spot keeps coming back. I feel like that's just the mark on the Craig Miles family.
Yeah. And I did not realize how much of like a ghost story that is. Have you Googled that? There are so many like YouTube videos and all kinds of stuff. And it's like listed as one of the creepiest places on Tennessee. Sometimes at night, there is a little girl playing on that little playground.
This mausoleum sits within the church yard. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
And the churchyard, there's like a really nice like stone concrete barrier around the churchyard. And there's this beautiful old church, old original stained glass windows. It's gorgeous. The whole thing is gorgeous and just like screams antebellum South.
She comes out only on Halloween. On Centenary Avenue, she can be seen. Tall Betsy is the lady in black. For scaring night owls, she has a hack. Now, if you're good and go home early, you won't get got by this gruesome girlie. But if you linger till after 10, we want you to know you're a has-been. 'Cause Betsy will tuck you under her arm, and you can bet that's cause for alarm. To Fort Hill Cemetery, she will go to her mausoleum with you in tow. If you don't escape before sunrise, I warn you now, you will be her prize.
She will have you for breakfast, I do not jest. You'll be on the menu, but not as a guest. Your bones she'll dump in that old well at Arnold's school, and no one will tell. Your parents, they'll worry and they'll fret. They'll search for you all over, I bet. So go home early on Halloween night, and November 1st, you'll be all right. Trick-or-treating is so much fun, but if you see Tall Betsy, you better run.
Now we talk about the story of the infamous Tall Betsy. On September of 1892, three young women were frightened by a woman in black. She wore a long black dress, but curiously wore men's yellow work gloves. The woman in black stalked some people at night for the following months, but she never tried to hurt anybody. She was really tall. And the locals really became curious about this woman, and search parties actually went to look for her. Her appearances were noted in the Cleveland Weekly Herald, which the paper at the time.
Yeah.
But most were skeptical. In 1894, the woman in black disappeared and was never seen again. During the 1920s and 30s, children were always warned of the lady in black and that you better not stay out after dark. And her name was either Black Betsy or what she would now be known as, Tall Betsy.
Which, what hell of a way to get your kids to come inside.
For real. For real. And I mean, Tall Betsy in Cleveland, Tennessee, you grow up here, you know.
There's a Tall Betsy statue that goes up downtown every year on top of one of the buildings. It's massive, and I love when she goes up every year. And then also in front of the Starbucks.
Yep.
I shit y'all not. Okay. And right after this, it gets replaced with Christmas lights. A massive, massive, like, lights display. Like, it's like this big, huge outline, and it's all wrapped in, like, Christmas lights. But it is of Tall Betsy.
It literally so
doesn't
happy.
It say run from Tall Betsy, yes, or something like that.
If you see Tall Betsy, you better run something.
It has to be 50 feet by 100 feet. I mean, it's massive. Yeah,
like, we are getting super excited about this, but I love that because when I see the Tall Betsy thing go up, I'm like, ho, 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 spooky season.
Here.
Let's do it.
And also, side note, we're going to get into this. The cemetery that Tall Betsy refers to in her poem, that poem refers to, is the same one that the Craig Miles, the rest of their grave plot is in. And where Nina was originally buried. Same cemetery.
And let me add actually a little plug for Lee University here. Every single spooky season, they do a walkthrough history tour.
Y'all, it's so cool.
It is. They show you those graves. They tell you about them. They dress up in period piece clothing. It is amazing. And I want to recommend that to everybody.
Yes.
So to tell you about Tall Betsy, I need to tell you about Flora Shields. And Flora Shields was born in August of 1866, and she died in 1951. She was essentially an old maid. She never married. She never worked. She lived off her family's wealth. And she is buried here in Cleveland, but she only spent a few years here. After she died, her family moved on to Oregon and then on to Florida. Whenever she would have lived here, it would have been whenever she was anywhere between like 35 and 43. The Shields Mausoleum was likely built around 1900 when they moved here. The only people that are there are Flora and her parents.
Let me tell you, I've walked to this mausoleum many a times. It looks like it's something built for somebody who was in Slytherin House. And it's a little beat up now, but it's at the top of the hill. And when you look out over the valley that it's over, that view is something, it's a shame to waste it on the dead.
When businessman Alan Jones saw that beautiful tomb with that beautiful view, he thought, this is the perfect place to make Tall Betsy's tomb. And it really just kind of ended up working out that the timeline added up to where if Flora was Tall Betsy, her family would have been moving out of the area at the time. She would have passed away, so she would have just suddenly disappeared. And nobody knew much about her, so it kind of made it even better. Alan Jones loved the story about Tall Betsy. That's always what he had wanted to dress up for as Halloween. He grew up, you know, hearing the stories. You better come home on Halloween night, because if you don't, Tall Betsy is going to eat you and then throw your bones into
Arnold well, which sounds terrifying to me, even as an adult. But so in 1980, the Downtown Cleveland Group, Central City Action Association, which is now Main Street Cleveland, wanted to create a goblin for their downtown promotions.
We also, Cleveland is home to M&M Mars, which is a candy manufacturer, which what better holiday for them to really lean into than Halloween?
Starting from 1980 until 1998, every single year at 150 Centenary Avenue, which is the Joneses' homestead where they grew up, Tall Betsy would be there. And in 2005, the block party was actually dedicated to Tall Betsy to honor her 25th anniversary. And it actually had the largest crowd in the event's history. So as of 2014, now Bailey Jones is Tall Betsy. And that is the story of how Tall Betsy became to be.
Hey, Bailey. And Ellen, congratulations on your marriage.
Yes, congratulations, Bailey and Ellen. So that is the story of Tall Betsy.
This one is you're going to get one of my personal experiences. So when I was younger, my parents took us on a lot of beach vacations. And back in the early 2000s, the way you got like a beach house or something was like you went through a catalog of this place.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then you called and you rented it through a company.
Right.
That kind of thing. They did. They got this house, looked really great pictures. There was like an indoor pool with it. It wasn't like a massive pool or anything, but it was like a typical Florida house with like an indoor pool. And let me say, it wasn't a Florida house. We were in Jekyll Island, Georgia.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if y'all ever been to Jekyll Island. It's ocean water. It's not Gulf. So it's not as clear. But the beach there is really cool. So they have a Driftwood Beach. I think there's like a turtle rescue. So, you know, it is a pretty popular vacation spot, I would say. And I think that the World Bocce Ball Tournament is held there. But it's a cool little island to go to. It's a fun, especially for a family vacation, because you could kind of ride your bike everywhere. They're at this house, and we head out there, right? So right as we're walking in, and I mean, I'm probably like 10 or 11
right
at that point, somewhere in there. You walk into what is like the front living room of the house. Hated it.
Oh, no.
Did not get a good feeling from that, and right?
Kids can tell that stuff, too.
Yeah. And like literally, we were there for like a week and a half. And nobody spent any time in that room. Nobody watched TV in that room. No, we walked in and out of the front door in that room, and that was it. We spent most of our time, like, if we watched TV or anything, it was out on the sunroom. Because that didn't feel as weird. But that living room was weird. So, parents let us loose. They go pick your bedrooms. Of course, I picked the bedroom with its own bathroom.
Right.
My little brother gets the other bedroom. Everything's all good. We start settling in. Unpack your stuff, you know, get in the pool, typical kid stuff. Well, I had folded all of my clothes like I normally would.
Yeah.
And there was like a little, like a chair in the closet. Like just, it was somewhere to put the chair. And then you just would use the chair like a shelf. And so I just stacked all my, like my folded stuff up on there and hung my hang up stuff, you know. I came in from going and like helping my mom get stuff out.
Yeah.
And the closet door was open. I was pretty sure that I had closed it. I was like, okay, well, maybe I didn't. Or maybe Austin came in here and was like trying to see if I had something. Something like that. As siblings do. So I closed the closet door. And then like the next night, so nothing happened that night. Get up, have a normal day. We go to the beach, have fun. The next night, I wake up, and it is cold.
Ooh, ooh.
And when I tell you, like, cold in that room, think it's weird or whatever. Get up, go pee, get back in bed. It's not as cold in there anymore. The next morning, I get up to put my clothes on. And all of my clothes that were sitting on the chair in the closet are now on the floor.
I normally always say, I wish you could see Randa's face, but now I wish they could see mine.
Yeah. Ashley's looking at me like, what, how have I not heard the story before?
Yeah, like, oh.
So all of my clothes are now on the floor. So I'm like, damn it. You know? And so pick them up, fold them, put them back, go on about my day. And so one of the windows in the bedroom that I was staying in overlooked the pool. So today was the day that we were going to use the pool. And I kept feeling like when we were in the pool, me and my brother, you know, just splashing around playing Marco Polo, doing what kids do. I kept feeling somebody looking at me from that window.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I kept going like, Mom, are you like watching us from that, that window? First of all, my mom was not that kind of mom. My mom was like, if y'all drown, it's your own dang fault. I'm going in here and I'm doing what I want to do. He was like, no, it, weirdo, like I'm coming to the door and checking on y'all like every 15 minutes or
right.
I was like, okay, you know, weirded out. At 10 or 11, you're not thinking like,
that's a ghost.
This is the ghost, right? You're thinking like, why is mom being weird, right?
To where now as an adult, I'm immediate like paranormal activity.
Right, exactly.
That is a ghost.
So fast forward a couple days later, one of our family friends is going to come down to the beach. And this lady came with us to the beach often.
Patty.
So Patty came down, is going to stay in the room that I was in because it had it was like a full size bed.
Right.
And then my brother had a room with two twin size beds. So I was going to shuffle on into my and share a room with my brother for the next couple of days while Patty was here for the rest of the vacay. And Patty, she was like weirded out by this.
Yeah.
Thing, right. But like same thing happens to Patty. All her stuff ends up in the floor. One night it's real, 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 real cold in there. But Patty rolls over one night and there's a little girl sitting. And she was like, it wasn't you, Randa, because she was short. Now listen, y'all, I have been like 5 foot something since I was like probably six. I mean, like I have been monstrously tall until I hit high school and then I was normal.
Like me, always have to stand in the back of group pictures.
Oh, literally. I was as tall as my coach in my fifth grade basketball picture. It's ridiculous. Patty rolls over and she sees this little girl standing there. And she said that she wasn't like opaque, but like she wasn't there either. She just didn't look real is what Patty said.
Right.
She just didn't look real. And now I've not ever heard another story like this from Patty in my life. Okay. This is a woman very grounded in reality.
And so Patty's a reliable source.
So I trusted what Patty said. And so she was like, I just feel like this little girl is just like tied to this house in some way. We start like devising like a plan of like, she comes back. Oh, we're going to try to talk to her. And we're like, yes. Okay. We got to try to figure this out. Right. And I feel like she either had to have been tied to that living room.
Yeah.
Or that like back bedroom. Because and she didn't mess with my dad and she didn't mess with my brother. And like my mom was staying in the same room with my dad. So she wasn't in that room. But It was really weird. And like, we never figured out what happened. Like, did she die there? Like,
but see, like, ghosts are so weird. She couldn't have even
died there. Just like residual energy.
Right. That could have even been like they had used furniture and the couch was in the house that she grew up in. So she's tied to that couch, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know if it was like separate trauma
right.
in those two rooms that made it so. Yeah, because, like, I mean, she could have been tied to the chair.
Right. Like, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, that could have been, like, so that's creepy.
Yeah. So that was, like, my first, like, ghost encounter.
Right. I
like so that. I never actually saw her, but I definitely felt her. Like I said, I live very close to a cemetery, and pretty often, like, if you're out on my back porch, like around like dusk, you will see shadow people walk by. Listen, there are people that walk in that cemetery all the time, but there's a difference. You know, people look very solid. Like, even right. if they're backlit and they look just like a black figure, they're very, very solid. Shadow people look like literal shadows. I mean, like, they're not solid. Some look, like, wispy, if that makes sense. Like,
that makes sense, yeah.
And some look more, like, I don't want to say, like, an energy, but, because that's, like, kind of vague,
yeah.
you know? But they look more like all black static.
Right. And I saw something one time that say that like you always see ghosts like a couple inches off the ground because they're really in another dimension, like another alternate timeline, I guess, mm-hmm. that it's like stacked on top of ours. And that's the reason that they're always like levitating.
Mm-hmm.
Like playback.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. So that might be like you're getting the impression of them, but not full them coming through.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like tragedy that is just ingrained in the area.
Right.
In the Appalachians. I mean, the Appalachians are older than bone.
Right. Well, not just that. Like you have the Indian tragedies. But then there were so many, like, battles fought in this area, too.
Yeah, like, we live smack dab in the middle of the Trail of Tears.
Oh, yes, and I want to do
right there. Trauma.
I want to do a full episode on the battlefields, the Chickamauga battlefields one day.
All right, y'all. I hope you enjoyed your first Spooky Things episodes. If you want more personal stories of hauntings, sleep paralysis, anything like that, time slips, crazy coincidences, glitches in the matrix.
Time slips is a good one.
Oh, yeah. I love stories of time slips.
Yeah.
They really freak me out.
Ooh, and past life regression, like stories and dreams too, those. I'm pretty obsessed with those.
Black Eyed Kids.
If you want those stories, you got to send us those stories.
The ones your mama and your papa used to tell you when you were little. Those stories.
Bring them on in.
Or Tall Betsy will throw your bones down the Arnold well. Thanks, guys.
Happy Halloween.
Don't whistle in the woods at night.
Bye, y'all.